Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 88. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 88, introduced by Representative Crone, an act relating to motor vehicles regarding DUI penalties. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Peasley, Throne, No, Brechtel, Nicholas. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 88 do pass. And I would ask the chair to recognize the sponsor to explain the bill.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I rise in strong support of House Bill 88. I'd like to start by talking a little bit about the current structure of Wyoming's driving while under the influence law. This particular bill deals with a felony driving while under the influence, which under current law is 4 convictions within a 10-year period. This bill would have no effect on a first offense, a second offense, or a third offense within a 10-year period. So this bill is aimed mainly at the repeat offenders, what I would call hardcore offenders that we are seeing more and more in the court system, folks that are having 4, 5, 6, 7 DUIs. So what we have is a situation where a court, the maximum penalty that a court can impose, whether that's a 4th, a 5th, a 6th, a 7th, all the way up to a 12th or 13th DUI, is a two-year period. That's all. So we have a situation where the a person who's been through the system multiple times, have been to jail multiple times, the maximum penalty is that two-year period. This bill does two things. It increases the penalty from 2 years to 7 years, which gives courts more flexibility in two ways. Number one, it can extend the amount of time that these offenders can be taken off the street. And that's important. And you see several of these defendants that are in these circumstances that don't want treatment, that don't want to change, that don't want to quit drinking and driving. So this allows courts to take those individuals off the streets for an extended period of time. In addition to that, it extends the probationary period for these offenders. So it allows for more intensive treatment programs that last 9 months to over a year, and that could be part of that probationary period. So members of the House, I would urge your support of this bill. We have several co-sponsors that I'm proud to have on this bill, and I know for walking in and out, the Youth for Justice folks from CODI have been lobbying as well. So I would stand for any questions.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would just like to ask my good colleague from Park County, do you have any information, have judges been imposing the maximum sentence up to 2 years for these offenders?
Representative Crone.
Thank you. Chairman Korberg, yes, it's been my experience that several judges, district court judges across the state have been imposing the maximum, which is 2 years at this time.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Just a couple of questions more than anything. The term 7 years was 5 years discussed. Seven appears to be, well, it's obviously an odd number, but a strange number for this. And then also the effect on, not that I'm sympathetic to this cause, but if someone has 3 DUIs right now, this bill goes into effect, then their enhanced penalties will apply to them on their 4th, and the equal protection of someone who's starting from scratch. Were those considered in committee, and what are your responses to that?
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Greer, the issue of the 7 years was brought up in committee, and it was discussed amongst several members of the community as well about what an appropriate period of time was. Obviously, the majority of our felonies are 10-year felonies. We do have some 5-year felonies as well. It was the thought of both myself and some of the co-sponsors that 7 was appropriate, in that it provides for that extended period. You know, when you have giving the judges more discretion, I think is really a key aspect of this, because you're going to have folks that have these 10, 11, 12 DUIs, and should it be 10? Maybe not, but I think 7 is a reasonable number. As to the applicability of someone who has 3 DUIs right now, I think that once, if this became law, they would be faced with those increased penalties, and that's just the way it would go. So,
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On and for the bill, one of the other aspects of this is when you have a 2-year maximum, and if you're sentenced to that, people need to realize that a judge can only sentence on the minimum side of 90% of that maximum sentence. So the most you could really get is a 1.8 if you convert that to months, 1.8 to 2. The problem is once you're arrested, you get credit starting the time you're incarcerated. If it goes all the way through trial and you're sitting in the county jail, by the time you would get sentenced in district court on this, let's say you have 8 or 9 months credit for time served. By the time you're sent to prison, you know, first of all, you barely get there, and then you're sent back home, which is kind of a waste of money. And the reason it's a waste of money is because when you're talking about a subsequent DUI such that you're going to get a felony, they have programs that we pay for, that we've authorized in this institution, that by the time they get there, they're not going to be there long enough to even complete the program, which is, it kind of defeats the entire purpose. The 2-year maximum defeats the entire purpose of spending them or sending them to prison, because it's not only about punishment. We pay for programs for rehabilitation. And we have a lot of those programs that may last 6 months, may last 9 months, but it's kind of ridiculous to send them to prison after they get credit for that time served. They get there and they say, well, you're not going to be here long enough to complete the intensive treatment unit, for example, for substance abuse or alcohol abuse. So we'll send you back out without getting any treatment. So it was punishment, but we didn't even have the chance to complete the rehabilitation aspect of what prison is about also. Thank you.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Do I hear the question on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 88 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 88 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 29. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 29, introduced by the Minority Committee. An act relating to abandoned mine land funds regarding Uranium Research Center funds extension. This bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Hunt, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 29 do pass. This is a very brief bill, but it was an interim topic. And just by way of quick history, we put $1,600,000 into looking at how we could best optimize research and development of uranium for Wyoming. The first thing that was done was a symposium where they brought all of the interested parties together and asked them the question on what could be done to improve this industry for the benefit of Wyoming. After that meeting, there were particular research projects that were requested through the School of Energy Resources. Those projects were vetted with the Energy Resource Council, and about $1 million has been expended on it. There were a number of other projects that were proposed for research that were declined at the time, and what this does is allow that initial money to be extended for another period of time and on projects that fit for Wyoming. I think with that, I'll just urge your support and answer any questions.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
I guess my question deals with your last two or three sentences about what, you know, just exactly what has been accomplished since the session laws of 2011, and when did it go into effect? I think I heard you say that $1 million have been allocated for projects, but they're not done yet, or is that right? Because I see in the fiscal note somewhere it says $250 or $250,000 has been spent, and you got $750 is committed. And I'm trying to figure out what has been accomplished so far with this and what we expect to accomplish. And I don't know if you have examples of particular studies that are going to do us some good or what, but I just kind of wonder if this is a deal where, well, you know, it might be a very good deal. I don't know, but it just seems like sometimes these things just go on and on because the money hasn't been spent yet, and I just want your comments. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Well, thank the good representative from just north of Natrona County and Johnson County. The first $250,000 was where money that was used by the University of Wyoming through the School of Energy Resources to bring the interested parties together and get them on the same page. Those of you who are in the legislature at the time this initial effort was initiated, we had people that wanted full-blown nuclear plants like we see scattered around the country with thousands of megawatts of generation, clear down to the portable sizes that you could use in remote locations. We had where should they go and what should they do. So we wanted to get everybody on the page. That first $250,000 was to put together the experts to bring that group together, and they did get a focus of where they should go in the future. And there it was with this money, which was to the School of Energy Resources for research. They picked those projects that had a likelihood of some success after the research in developing Wyoming's uranium resources. In that process, there were a number of projects that were proposed, rejected because of their merits by the School of Energy Resources Council, and that's what we're asking for, is just to use that following amount, but it'll be primarily focused on in situ development of uranium in Wyoming. That seems to be the most beneficial place to put this additional research, and that's the balancing approximately $750,000 or $580,000.
There further discussion on the bill? Question on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 29 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 29 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 50. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 50, introduced by Representative Brown, an act relating to insurance fraud prevention. This bill was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. No, Brechtel, signed Representative Brown, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 50 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment number 1. Madam Chairman, this bill is a refinement of a bill that we've considered before with respect to communications between insurance companies and law enforcement agencies. We have an existing statute on the book, 262131, entitled Immunity from Liability, and it makes grants immunity for communications under a number of circumstances. The most notable being the insurance commissioner is authorized representative and any examiner appointed by the commissioner, complete immunity for communication with the insurance company as it should be. And likewise, any of the commissioners, examiners who are performing examinations get the same immunity. This is the last time we considered this bill. It had a whole array of additions to the immunity, and that didn't set very well, I don't think, with this body. So we went back and refined this very simply, and we simply added into the existing immunity provision an additional clause that allows the insurance company with immunity to communicate with law enforcement agencies or a government agency established to detect and prevent fraud, which presumably would be the insurance department, during the course of an investigation. Now, this can manifest itself in two ways. Most predominantly, we think about the insurance company finding some act of fraud or some suspicion of fraud and wanting to communicate that with law enforcement. Right now, they feel they have very conservative counsel, and the advice they're getting from house counsel is you can't go talk to law enforcement because of the potential that you'll render us somehow liable if law enforcement pursues the action. Well, this eliminates that conservative advice. I don't think that would generally be the rule, but who knows? In some instances, it might. But the other way this manifests itself is with law enforcement. And law enforcement right now, in order to go get that information from the insurance company, if the insurance company is getting the same conservative advice from counsel, law enforcement comes and makes an inquiry, and the insurance company says, you know, we can't talk to you. You have to go get a subpoena. Well, that's hard to do. It consumes time. By the time that's done, sometimes the investigation's not timely. Maybe sometimes it's hard to get a subpoena issued by a court just based on the information that law enforcement has. But they need to be able to talk to the insurance company and either confirm information or find out that it's not true. And so it's a two-way street. And it's consumer-friendly both ways in that it helps law enforcement get information from the insurance company with respect to insurance fraud, and it helps the insurance company pass information to law enforcement with respect to insurance fraud. It's interesting that we already have this provision with respect to arson. And if it's an arson case, right now, law enforcement and the insurance company can communicate with each other with immunity, but that does not carry over into other kinds of fraud. It's a consumer-friendly bill. Insurance fraud is predominant, and it becomes, I think, more predominant in tough economic times like this. I don't see the harm that could come from it, from a free flow of information between law enforcement and insurance companies. In fact, it has the potential to cut down on fraud and facilitate the involvement of law enforcement in these acts, which are clearly illegal. So with that, Madam Chairman, I'd stand for questions.
We are on the Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 50. Discussion, Chairman Korberg.
Madam Chairman, I don't have a question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
And Madam Chairman, if I may, there is a provision in the statute that says that a person's entitled to the award of attorney's fees if he's a prevailing party in a civil cause of action for libel, slander, or other tort based on the activities involved in this. So the amendment adds that to the flow of information back and forth to law enforcement. So that would be the amendment, would make the attorney's fees provision apply to this dialogue between the insurance company and law enforcement. So if there is bad faith or there's libel, slander, some sort of thing like that, and the claimant prevails, they would be awarded their attorney's fees. So with that, Madam Chairman, I'd ask for the vote on the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. You've heard the motion on the standing... Chairman Korberg? No? You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 50, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just need to have the good chairman of judiciary. I just want to make sure that I'm not reading this incorrectly. On page 2, line 3, where it starts, where it says, pursuant to an examination made under this chapter or any other investigation, does that in essence mean that if it has nothing to do with insurance fraud, but there's another investigation going on, that they can also provide information? I'm just not sure I'm reading that section right, Madam Chairman.
Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, thank you. It does. The existing language says that those disclosures may be made pursuant to an examination. And this does add the language, or any other investigation. Now, it's qualified by the existing language that follows, which applies to the addition. It says, if the act of communication or delivery was performed in good faith and without fraudulent intent. So it would be some other sort of investigation. So the existing statute has to do with examinations. This broadens it to other investigations, which would be the ones typically that law enforcement would be involved in. They wouldn't be involved in examinations.
There further discussion on the bill? Question on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 50 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 50 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 31. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 31, introduced by the Management Council. An act relating to general revision of laws dealing with obsolete laws. This bill was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Bechtel, Buchanan, Connolly, Kraft, Gingrey, Illaway, Lubnow, Patton, Reeder, Stubson, Throne. Absent, Goggles, excused, Korberg. Signed, Representative Buchanan, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Speaker?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 31 do pass. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the annual obsolete laws bill sponsored by Management Council. I'll just walk you through it very quickly. We deal with, obviously, obsolete laws. And what that specifically means is there are items in here that throughout the statutes that called for certain dates, and those programs or those tasks have been fully executed. For example, if you look on page 2 there, lines 12 through 17, you can see that those dates have long passed, and so they're not necessary to be in there anymore. The same with lines 23 and 24. It was a reference to 2002, which has already passed. The next section you'll see deals with other archaic references. For example, on page 7, it's archaic because the Game and Fish now, we change it to the director of the state Game and Fish because they're no longer called the commissioner. At the bottom of that page on lines 20-21, instead of it being Interstate Commerce Commission, it's now referred to as the Surface Transportation Board. So it's a lot of that sort of thing with nomenclature on page 8. You can see the federal law there regarding pipelines under Title 37. That was reenacted, and it's an act of 2011. So we substitute the proper language there. Page 9, nomenclature as well, same as before. Page 10 is the same. Page 11 is the same. Page 12 is the same. 13 is the same. And then the only thing that's a little different on page 14 are incorrect citations or cross-references. As you can see there on line 6, page 14, those sections, subsections K and M, have been repealed if you look at the statute today. So we're going to take them out. And on page 15, it's just a reference to the correct statutory citation. And the same applies on page 17. And so I'd stand for any questions. If there are no questions, I'd call for the question.
There is a Committee of the Whole amendment. Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 31 and ask for your favorable consideration. I believe this is in your inbox, and again, it's a change in nomenclature. In Statute 14.4.101, it talks about child care facilities, and included in that is the term home for defective children. I don't think we use that terminology anymore, and this changes it, merely changes it to home for children with developmental disabilities. And with that, I would stand for questions.
Question having been called on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Question having been called on the bill, all those in favor of Speaker Buchanan's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 31 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 31 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution number 3. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution number 3, introduced by Representative Botten. A joint resolution requesting Congress submit to the states a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution prohibiting the infringement of parents' rights. This joint resolution was referred to Committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Gay, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Miller, Peasley, Reeder, No, Barbudo, Kraft. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution number 3 do pass. And I will turn the explanation of the bill over to its sponsor.
Representative Botten.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I bring you Joint Resolution 3, which is intended to request that Congress begin the process of determining whether to amend the Constitution of the United States to guarantee the right of fit parents to raise their children and to determine their best interests, and furthermore, to prevent any international treaties from taking effect which would modify or take away that right. Now, I'm not going to walk you through the bill page by page because we all know how to read and we know what this is all about. What I want to do is sort of describe what sort of things have caused me to be concerned. Now, I'm a parent of two boys. I've seen things in the news, as most of you do, that caused me to wonder what's going on and be insecure. I heard about in the news a state on the West Coast that all the bother about the human papillomavirus vaccination for young girls and whether states should mandate it or not. And this particular state wanted to go ahead and just let children decide without parental consent whether to have this vaccination. And that kind of concerns me because I, as a parent, you know, I kind of really want to know and think I have a right to know what is going on with my children's health care. Well, give you a headline from last week, two of them, in fact. You heard about the young lady who sent her daughter to school with a sack lunch last week and had a turkey and ham sandwich and a banana and some apple juice and potato chips, and school officials declared that lunch to be unfit and made her eat the cafeteria food instead, calling into question whether that young mom knew what the best interests of that child were insofar as feeding a lunch. Now, mind you that if you went over and got the box lunch next door, that wasn't even as healthy as that little girl brought to school. Another one from last week, headline. A nice lady who I think was associated with the Principals Association was testifying before the Education Committee of the Michigan Legislature. And she testified that, get this, parents simply don't know what's in the best interest of their children with respect to education. And we have to rely on those experts in the field like her to tell us what that best interest is. So that's right at home. And we see, with many issues, you know, 30 years ago, was there a call for legalizing drugs? And, you know, now maybe there is. And these things sort of happen slowly over time, and then they start seeming to be normal or more normal than we thought years ago. And I happen to believe what the founders said, that we are born with certain unalienable rights given to us by our Creator. And I really have a hard time believing that that right does not include the right to raise your children and for parents to understand what's in their best interest. So that's the nature of this resolution. And the big thing is that now the United Nations has an answer to save us from all our bad parenting. And this treaty has been along for now over 20 years. It's called the United Nations Convention on Rights of the Child. And it would propose to do things like make it the United Nations decision to determine what's in the best interests of our children. And there would be a committee, there has been a committee set up, a commission of the UN that makes all these decisions as to what's in best interests of children. And I want to describe to you a few things you can see from certain countries. Now, the Netherlands has been considered one of the best, most child right friendly countries according to the UN. Children can smoke at age 16 or use marijuana. The age of sexual consent is 12 years old. 97% of 15-year-old girls are using contraception. Sweden is another one. Spankings, timeouts, and sending your children to their room when they're naughty is outlawed in Sweden. These are sorts of things that the UN Convention sort of encourages to prevent parents from having any authority over their children. The UN Commission on Rights of the Child occasionally puts out documents called General Comments. They're published. You can read them. And there's one from 2009, General Comment number 12 from this commission. Just wanted to read you something from one of these, talking about adolescents, basically. It says, adolescents need to have easy access to individual complaint systems, as well as judicial and appropriate non-judicial redress mechanisms that guarantee fair and due process with special attention to the right to privacy. In other words, setting up parent complaint boards, in essence. A mechanism so when your child doesn't like the discipline they're receiving, they can go to this board and have that board impose its will on the situation and thus determine the child's best interests. Now, as a parent, I've had many an occasion to argue with my children what time was bedtime and what we should eat for dinner or any such thing, and we thought, at least we think now, I hope, that we are entitled to tell our children, go to bed and you'll be in bed at 8. And no, I don't want you associating with that drug dealer, Johnny. There's a more or less infamous case in New Zealand where apparently a girl was purportedly raped, but she continued for some reason to want to keep hanging around with these boys. I don't know the psychology behind this, but the parents obviously wanted to take this girl out of that environment and make her not associated with these boys that did these things to her. I mean, you know how we would react if that were our daughter. Well, the daughter really wanted to exercise her right to free association under this treaty. And so she brought this matter to one of these parental review boards, and guess what? She was taken out of the home because the parents were denying her right of free association under the treaty. These perverse results just caused me such concern. Now, this resolution, I understand, you know, people have an issue or might have an issue that maybe amending the Constitution is very serious and shouldn't be done very often. It's something we have to be very cautious about. It's been done 27 times since the Constitution was ratified. And it was done 4 times in my lifetime. And frankly, if I were a year older, it would be 5 times in my lifetime. Hasn't been done in 20 years, so it doesn't happen very much. But it's a very careful and deliberative and public process. It happens by passing both houses of Congress by two-thirds, a supermajority, and then three-quarters of the state's legislatures have to approve it, too, before it becomes a constitutional amendment. It's not easy, and it is a very public process. Nothing like a situation where you might come home, open up the paper, and find out nine people in robes have made up something new you've never heard about, hasn't been done in public, and it's just become law. So I really urge you to think that, or hopefully believe that, we don't have anything to fear by exercising what is in the Constitution as to how a constitutional amendment arises. It doesn't happen very much, and if it's a bad idea, the country won't let it happen. Now, this resolution isn't brand new, only, you know, first thing in the country. We're part of a process. In the last 2 years, seven states have passed a similar resolution: Alabama, Florida, Idaho, Louisiana, Montana, Oklahoma, South Dakota. This year, in the legislatures around the country, eight more: Georgia, Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and here in Wyoming. Last year, I know we passed a resolution asking Congress to start the congressional process to start a constitutional amendment to balance the budget, and it didn't happen, did it? But it certainly tells the sentiment, and I think if nothing else, this resolution passed and sent to Washington would at least tell the sentiment. Now, in closing, I want to tell you, kind of paint a picture. I got some advice from the good chairwoman over here as to paint a picture as to what I think might look like in our country should this UN convention get passed. I had some good advice from a gentleman who visited me after the committee meeting on this bill. Let's pretend that this UN convention gets passed. All right, two-thirds of the Senate does this. Now, Congress is going to rush because they have to. They have no choice. The UN says so. They have to now pass some big bills, big laws. And I don't know, maybe this sounds familiar. Maybe it'll be 1,000 or 2,000 pages long, and probably no one will read it before passing it. Can't really hand it off to an agency who may promulgate 20 to 60 pages of regulations, and then the states will be required to pass new laws. And in essence, what we'll be left with is a huge, huge bureaucracy that will get into each one of our families and determine how we are to raise our kids. And we'll be chewed up in the process. I fear that. And so for that reason, I hope that we can at least get the process started. I'll stand for questions. Thank you.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I do not step up to the mic lightly, and I do not step up to the mic to speak against this good cause, this good fundamental principle. Of course, what we're talking about in this bill is inherent, inalienable rights that, of course, have been granted to us in our Constitution. Why is it that our founding fathers found it unnecessary to list all of inherent, inalienable rights in our Constitution? I would say that the answer to that question is because that list is endless, ladies and gentlemen. And we should bear in mind, as we contemplate a vote on this, a very important vote, of course, that extensive listing of inalienable, inherent rights could determine a point of reference in the future that may lead people to make a decision that we are only recognizing rights on the list, that perhaps a list that does not include another inalienable right may not need to be recognized. Thank you, Madam Chair.
There further discussion on the bill? Representative Botten.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I
I appreciate the comments of the last speaker. I would think that, you know, had the British been making decisions about what the children's best interests were prior to the Revolutionary War, this one would already be in the Constitution. It's only when the government begins to infringe upon these inherent rights that aren't specifically listed in the Constitution that we have to act to try to protect those. And so were another right, an inherent right, to come up again in another 10 or 100 years, I would expect the same process to be followed so that government does not trample on these inherent rights. So I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and against this, I believe that this is brought in all in the intent of goodwill and the gesture of doing the right thing. But really ask yourself, is this what we need in Wyoming? Is there really an issue here in Wyoming? I listened to the testimony before me, and I hear cases cited, Denmark, Sweden, other places like this. This is Wyoming. We're in control of our destiny right here. I don't see the immediate threat. If somebody can point this out, that they are ready to infringe on our sovereignty and our rights, our parental rights in this state, please enunciate that for me clearly, because I do not see the problem. Therefore, I do not see the need to push this forward. It's just one of those other fights that, you know, or a problem or a piece of legislation looking for a problem to create something that's not really existent. Right now in this debate, we're spending a lot of time and we're probably killing bills, so I'm going to keep my comments very short, but I think we need to concentrate on the things that are important in this body. I think parental rights are important to the citizens of our state, but really, we need to stay out of this, just like the federal government needs to stay out of it. Let the parents raise their kids because they know what's best. And if the issue is local to Wyoming, then we need to address local issues. This is just one fight or one thing we need not bother with at this time when we got more important things to deal with. Thank you.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I go back and look at the amendments that we have made to the Constitution. The right for women to vote. Oh, guess what? I'm standing up here speaking because women did get the right to vote. Civil rights, many, many others. And, you know, those things only come to the Constitution when they're being called in question. And if someone somewhere is calling into question parental rights, then I think that it's time that Wyoming stand up and be counted and say, yep, I believe that there should be, parents should be in control of decisions when their children are too young to make their own decisions. And then I think that as they age, more decisions should be left to them, that as they mature and are able to make decisions. But and my kids are grown. I don't even have a child in the fight, as it were. But I have grandchildren, and I watch my children parent their children and think that they have that right. And until someone else called it into question, we all just assume that is their right. I'm on and in favor of this joint resolution and hope that we can send a message to Congress that should this come to their attention, Wyoming stood up and was counted and said, parental rights count.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I really regret having to vote on the issue. However, I've gotten some correspondence that suggested to me that if I didn't vote for it, that I was opposed to the right that we have to raise our children. I only have 5 children. We lost one. I have 12 grandchildren. I have 6 great-grandchildren. I love them deeply, and how they're going to be raised is going to be raised by our family in our state in the protection of our state laws. The reason that some of these rights were not included when the Constitution was written, none of the Bill of Rights were involved at the time of the writing of the Constitution. The reason was is because the argument was that's up to the states. And at that time, up to the states meant individuals had the responsibility. I don't think that the state of Wyoming has failed. I think that our protections for our children is there, along with the protections of the inalienable rights that are present in the state constitution. And therefore, do as you wish, but don't challenge me that I don't believe in the family's right and responsibility to raise their children just because I vote no.
Representative Davison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that we all know there have been changes to the Constitution, as has been previously said, and there can be more changes made. And I don't think we should be afraid or hesitant to ensure that we continue to have our parental rights, that we need to make sure that Washington sees that Wyoming is intent on this and doesn't want to be stepped on. Thank you.
Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, I would simply ask the bill sponsor whether this has the potential to create a constitutional shield against being charged with child abuse.
The comments, Representative Botten.
Madam Chair, thank you for the comments. The one thing I do believe is that everybody here is certainly concerned about their children, their grandchildren, nephews, nieces, and want to preserve the rights of parents to raise their children and determine their best interests. So that's the most gratifying thing I have to say about this debate. To my good friend from Sheridan County, I understand he's a good friend. And I won't say that as just a matter of courtesy. He's a good friend. So I don't take what he said as an insult or anything derogatory. He has children and grandchildren, and is it great-grandchildren now? And he's a very caring and loving man. The point is that while the Bill of Rights wasn't originally part of the Constitution, it did become part of the Constitution, and it began the process of further amendments to the Constitution. There are those who believe that the Constitution is a living, breathing document that should be changed at the whim of the High Court, and I just have the opinion that a better way to do it is with the public process in the Constitution itself, the constitutional amendment process. I am not worried about what's going on here in Wyoming. I'm worried about the federal government and the possibility at 2/3 vote of the Senate adopts a UN convention. And we cannot control that in Wyoming. We cannot do it. And to the good chairman of judiciary, my reply to you that is that no, there won't be a constitutional shield to child abuse or child neglect or child termination actions. The intent of this resolution is to maintain the status quo, not to change it, not to create a hyper parental right. There's no such thing as an absolute right under the Constitution. There's always limits. We've heard about the First Amendment. You can't say fire in a crowded theater. It's not absolute. Nothing is. Currently, as of the Yoder case in the 1970s recited in the resolution, the judge-created law or interpretation is that parental rights exist. And this has never changed the ability of state law to apply to affect child custody, to affect child neglect or abuse allegations, because those processes are state law guaranteed due process. And those rights of parentage can only be taken by taken away or modified by usage of the court procedure, which inherently provides and must provide due process rights. I think there's another speaker, so I'll wait on. Thank you.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On and against the resolution, and following up on the good chairman from Judiciary, it is possible that if this constitutional amendment was passed, that it could be used as a shield against child abuse. As many speakers have talked about, parental rights are fundamental in this nation, meaning that they get the absolute highest compelling level of constitutional review. And over again, the Supreme Court of the United States, as well in Wyoming, has ruled that way. However, fundamental rights are not absolute, nor should they be. We have an absolute obligation to take care of our most vulnerable children and those are whom have been neglected and abused. And even over the strident beliefs of their parents that those children should remain with them, we have an obligation as a state to care for them. And that if this constitutional amendment passed, our Wyoming statutes may be reviewed under that new standard. And so I ask you to resist this House joint resolution.
Further discussion? Representative Botten.
I bet you're all getting tired of having me up here, so final comment to the last speaker. The problem is when you say, hey, we recognize we've got this right now because the High Court says it exists. And then you say, gosh, if we pass a constitutional amendment to say the same thing, now all of a sudden it's created these barriers in the law to enforce custody, neglect, and abuse laws. It just doesn't make sense. You can't say, hey, we've got this right, and if we put it as a constitutional amendment, now it's a barrier. So I'm confused by that. So anyway, I hope you pass this resolution.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution Number 3 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Joint Resolution 3 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 54. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 54, introduced by Representative Berger, an act relating to the Crime Victims Compensation Act. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Beasley, Throne. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 54 do pass. And I would ask that the Chair recognize the sponsor.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, House Bill 54 is a clarification change, basically. It goes back to clarifying our original intent on crime victims' compensation and the recipients of the services that they provide for victims of crime. And basically what we had tried to do was to, and our intent was to get an unduplicated count of our program levels, which is currently our practice. But we have it stated as statewide, and we cannot do statewide because what happens is that it requires too much information that could identify an individual in a certain area. So all I'm asking you to send your approval on is changing a couple of words, one being on page 2, line 3, we just insert victims it served, and then at the bottom of page 2 on line 16, we take out such and we add each provider of the community. Line 17, we take out providers and add programs. And we believe this language will then help qualify us to continue receiving our federal funding, which is so important to this program. Thank you.
Is there further discussion on this bill? Question having been called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 54 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 54 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 21. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 21, introduced by Representative McConey, an act relating to motor vehicles regarding exceeding speed limit while passing. This bill was sent to the Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs Committee, number 8. They recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Korberg, Vonish, no, Blake, Zwanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Peterson, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Korberg?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 21 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the good Chairman of Transportation.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I bring you House Bill 21, which is rules governing overtaking on the left. And what this bill does, it says the driver of a passenger car, motorcycle, or pickup truck not towing any other vehicle may exceed the speed limit by up to 10 miles per hour while passing another vehicle traveling at less than the legal, and I want to stress the word legal, maximum speed limit. In order to safely pass the vehicle, the overtaking vehicle shall return to the right-hand lane and reduce speed to the posted limit as soon as practicable. This subsection shall be applicable only upon roadways divided into two lanes for two-way movement of traffic and where the posted speed limit is 50 miles per hour or greater. It shall not apply in construction zones. Passing a vehicle pursuant to this subsection shall be subject to all other applicable motor vehicle laws. A driver of a vehicle exceeding 10 miles per hour limitation of this subsection shall be subject to the full penalty and penalties applicable to exceeding the posted speed limit by the actual speed of the vehicle. As used in this section, motorcycle, passenger car, pickup, and vehicle means as defined in Wyoming Statute 311101. Ladies and gentlemen, I brought this bill because I feel we have a safety issue here. When you're coming upon a vehicle that's traveling slower than the maximum speed limit, and you are traveling the speed limit, and you're on a busy road, you're looking. All of a sudden, you start backing traffic up if they are afraid if they swing out to pass and they happen to exceed the speed limit, and an approaching vehicle happens to be a highway patrolman, or one that's following him happens to be a highway patrolman, and they've exceeded the speed limit to pass. So we get these big backups of cars, and the same thing if the vehicle happens to be a truck or a semi. It takes a lot longer to pass them, and if they're doing 62 miles an hour or 60 miles an hour, and you're doing 65, it takes a considerable period of time in order to safely pass, and get back in front of them. This is my big concern. I think this is a safety issue. Testimony in committee said that that the troopers try to look at these situations to make allowances for it and probably would not write a ticket if somebody did this. And my answer to that, of course, is if this is the case, then probably we should make it the law instead of putting the troopers in a position of ignoring the law that's already in place. Also, they said, well, how would the trooper know if we were coming to a hill and he didn't see the actual pass of the vehicle and couldn't judge the speed of the vehicle that was being passed because of an impending hill that was there. And I say, well, that sometimes happens. You can what-if things to death. But my concern is the safety of passing and stopping the backup of car after car after car after car. We see it in our community. We've got some pretty heavily traveled roads, and as many as 7 and 8 cars, and then all of a sudden somebody gets upset and tries to pass the whole string of cars at one time. And they get hung out there, and they're really moving, and it has caused some problems in the past. So I would be be here to answer any questions about this bill and why I brought it.
Chairman Childers.
Madam Chair, speaking to the chairman of TRW, not transportation, I don't think he's that pretty. I have a couple of questions. Actually, having testified in a court for a certain senator on the other end of the hall for a case like this, I guess I'm a little familiar with it. But is there a particular reason why you didn't use a 20 or 30 miles an hour plus reduce the speed to the posted speed limit as soon as practicable? The good senator was caught on both of those. And that's why I thought that it should be a, number one, a higher speed or a higher speed increase, and then also we may have to define the how long get back to the posted speed. I may have an amendment, but I would like a reply from the good chairman on that.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And along those lines, for the aspect of being on a motorcycle where you have the ability to use your sense of smell, one of the safety issues is if you're following a semi and you start to smell rubber, when you see those big retread tires pieces on the highway, that's one of those indications that you will probably, if you continue to follow that semi, be hit with a large piece of rubber or possibly crash. So on those motorcycles, especially some of these newer ones, and you hit the throttle to go around a semi, you could easily increase your speed, like the good chairman of revenue said, by 30 miles an hour pretty quickly.
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chairman.
Chairman McComey.
I'm getting old, and I have trouble keeping a lot of these questions in my mind, so could I every once in a while break in and answer them?
Please do, Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I certainly stand in support of this piece of legislation. I signed on it and then heard testimony, of course, in our Transportation Military Affairs Committee. If you look at this, there are numerous safeguards that's put into this so it doesn't become a kind of a racetrack type approach. You look at the bottom of page one, we have 10 miles an hour is the passing speed that you can see the vehicle you're going by. That takes the racehorse type approach off of this because we had a lot of testimony from the Highway Patrol. They're going to have a judgment factor this here. One is that 10 miles an hour. The second thing, the vehicle has to be going that you're passing, of course, here 50 miles an hour. That's another indicator of speed. But nevertheless, I think all of us on this floor have been behind the stream of cars on two-way roads and can certainly see the benefit of this when it's safe to do that kind of a deal. The safety features of this certainly outweigh the other sides that you may encounter with this piece of legislation. Overall, I think for traffic movement on our two-way roads, and there are a lot of them in the state of Wyoming, because if you go off the I-80 and various other localities, you're going to find this. So certainly stand in support of it and think it has adequate safeguards.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, with the reason for testimony in committee, one of the committee members has a relative who works in this for what we'll call a patrol in the state of Washington. They do not have a limit on how fast you can go to pass, safely pass. They consider it, he said that he was informed by his son that this is considered a safety issue there. But I didn't want to bring that up, but because most generally, 10 miles an hour, you can do it. Sometimes you have to exceed that. That's what I would hope the trooper would use a little reason. But as far as the distance to come back in, we grappled with that. And if you put 200 feet who's to judge 200 feet, especially looking in a rearview mirror, especially one of those that says objects behind you are closer than they appear. And so we felt the term reasonable would be so that you didn't, what would be reasonable, so you wouldn't be cutting back in front of it. That's another one of those terms. I wish there was a better way to define it, so we wouldn't get into what happened to your gentleman from the other side of the building here, where that was an interesting discussion I had with him. But ladies and gentlemen, I brought this because I see it all the time in my community. I've seen it traveling in other communities. YDOT's answer to this is a good one, but costs a lot of money, and that's these passing zones every so many miles. But until we get that in all of our communities, I would urge that we pass legislation, something like this, to make our roads safer.
There further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Korberg's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 21 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 21 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Representative Esquivel.
Madam Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
We'll stretch break in the south balcony, ladies and gentlemen, the 61st. We've got some volunteers here for the Cancer Action Network from Casper, Gillette, and Buffalo visiting the house.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 63. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 63, introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to child custody modification and visitation after military service. This bill is referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You have heard the you have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 63 do pass, and would defer the explanation of the bill to the representative from District 11.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Last year, we passed extensive legislation for the provision of temporary custody orders for deployed members of the military. There was one piece that we did not include, and so the military department has come back to us this year requesting that we provide a more specific process for termination of the temporary order when the service member returns from deployment. So if you turn to page 2 of the bill, this bill provides that when a member returns from deployment, the order will automatically terminate 20 days after the member has provided notice to the other parent of their return. And then if that parent has a concern about the order terminating, the parent can simply file a motion for modification of the order under our family law, and then the order would be stayed. So when a deployed member comes back, they could have been gone for a year, who knows, and perhaps the timing is right for them to again regain custody and to terminate the temporary order, or there might be some issues that need to be discussed. So in those cases where the deployed member wants to go back to what the status quo was prior to deployment, there's an automatic provision in place. But in those circumstances where there needs to be discussion and involvement of the court, a simple filing of a motion for modification would stay the process until the issues could be resolved. So I think it protects all the parties involved and, of course, protects the best interests of the children. and I would stand for any questions.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I certainly stand in support of this piece of legislation. Serving in the military for 22 years, one of the problems we have in a fact of life is that you have deployments. Deployments can be of short duration, like 30 days up to around a year. And one of the issues that's always faced when one is deployed and they have children, what's going to happen to the children? What are going to be my rights upon being ordered out under official orders or my return type situation? I think this piece of legislation answers that, certainly provides direction and guidance for the courts as they're dealing with military members that can go into multiple deployment stage. I certainly urge your passage.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Representative Throne? No. Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 63 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 63 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 55. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 55 introduced by Representative Berger. An act relating to secured transactions, perfection of security interests, titled personal property. This bill was referred to committee number one, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 55 do pass, and I further move adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. I would defer the explanation of the bill to the sponsor.
Chairman Berger.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill, House Bill 155, really is a simple change that's necessary in working with liens on single vehicles where you record a certificate of title, and it deals with auto dealers on their floor plan financing. This was discovered by an attorney in Sheridan County working with some dealerships up there. And so basically the bill is just to fix a conflict between the Uniform Commercial Code, which we in Wyoming adopted in 2001. And in doing so, we eliminated some statute language, which you'll see on page 2. And basically, it conflicts what we say in one portion with another. And the what happens is, in one portion, we're saying that this that they must file a financing statement with the Secretary of State on all autos, and then in the other language, it is a certificate of title, which you could put the lien on. So that's simply the change that we are making, and considering that it hasn't been corrected since 2001, we thought we should make it effective immediately. And I'll stand for questions.
We are on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill Number 55. Is there further discussion on the amendment? Question being called on the amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Is there further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 55 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill number 55 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 70. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 70, introduced by Representative Bodden. An act relating to firearms, the Wyoming Court Security Act of 2012. This bill was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. No, Brechtel. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 70 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. And I would turn the explanation of the bill over to the sponsor.
Representative Botten.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm spending the whole afternoon up here, and I'm sorry. This Wyoming Court Security Act of 2012 has a beginning, and I'd like to explain that and then walk through the bill. Each of us, of course, get appointed to various commissions or committees along the line, and I got the privilege of being appointed to a certain commission that has to do with court security. That commission was created by the legislature. Well, that committee has done several years of fine work, and this past spring we were talking about what to do now, and we came across or came to think about courtroom security in actuality and doing something as opposed to simply passing a policy or training guidance. And so we started talking about, well, what can we do? And we started reviewing what the law was. So first thing we saw was we have a concealed carry law that says no concealed carry firearms into the courtroom. Well, that's fine. Then the other side of the coin is open carry. There's no such limitation by law. A few days ago, well, last week, we were talking about that preemption statute that said that legislature preempts the local governments from passing any ordinance or law affecting firearms. So counties aren't supposed to create any laws that say anything to do with regulation of firearms. And, you know, we have also another thing. This is, I'm on the fourth hand now. We have many states around the country that have court decisions that say courts can secure their courtrooms. They have this inherent power under the law to do that. But we don't have that in Wyoming. So now the dichotomy between the reservation of this to this legislature to pass laws regarding court security and what would a court do now, given that legislative enactment, say they have the inherent authority? I don't know. So there are these questions that we have here, and so we started working on a bill. We started with the idea, well, let's just make restrictions on carrying firearms in an open carry fashion the same as concealed carry. And then we thought, well, okay, how does that secure courtrooms? Because, you know, it's not the law-abiding citizens that we worry about. It's the people who are meaning to do harm. So we abandoned that, and then we started looking at a broader approach, something designed to create actual security to ensure that nobody gets into a courtroom with a firearm. And that went through several generations, and we were starting with not firearms but deadly weapons, and then we changed from deadly weapons to firearms. We had started from basically all government buildings down to just court buildings, county court buildings. So that we come down to finally the bill that you see before you and the Standing Committee amendment. Now, first, I'd like you to make sure you go right to the back end of the bill, and you see that building is specifically defined. It's a county building only that contains a district or a circuit court. You know, we decided on the commission that we really ought to just focus in on court security, and that's why it was whittled down. And now back to the front, you can see that the intent is to have nobody carrying a firearm beyond the secured entrance to the building or portion thereof that's secured. And we created, a very flexible mechanism here by which a county can impose various levels of security for various time periods. So this bill is designed, for example, to allow a county, if they find the security need to secure their building, all of it, a part of it, to secure it some of the time, none of the time, or all of the time. And we knew full well that there was this counter incentive to secure a building all the time because that costs money. It's going to cost money. So they're going to have to be forced to pick and choose those instances where security is required. Now, why court security? I think by enacting this concealed carry law that said courtrooms are not a place that concealed carry should be allowed, acknowledge the fact that certain places a gun shouldn't be brought. Well, divorces happen in district courts, and family violence matters happen in circuit courts, and sometimes they can be dangerous. Now, I'll admit to you, we haven't had shootings here in Wyoming courts. I'm hoping that someone will talk about something that happened to a friend out of state, but it does happen. And I just hate to have us look at this thing only after somebody gets hurt or killed with a firearm. So there are exceptions where peace officers, of course, can carry firearms beyond that secured point, or anybody who has the express permission of the county commissioners or a judge operating in the building to carry a firearm beyond the checkpoint. Our friends over here in the office has created this penalty provision. I don't think anybody could possibly unintentionally pass a checkpoint with a firearm, because there'd be signs posted, there'd be the magnetometers. And by the way, because of the court security commission's work in the past, these magnetometers, you know, if you walk through and they go beep if you have a bunch of metal, they're commonly available now, so the counties don't have to buy anything. And so the final concept here that the commission was looking at was creating something to provide security that would not require an appropriation in these budget tough times, wouldn't also require counties to really go out of pocket big time. So that's the nature of the bill. Now, the standing committee amendment, I'll explain that. The first part, the page 2, line 9, this one got away from me, and this is my mistake, because when we switched from deadly weapons, I failed to mark that language out and insert firearms. So that's the first one. The second one on that page 3, line 4, that was and the following line, that was a committee suggestion, and regarding the posting of the signs, and it really made the bill simpler, so I agree with that. And the final correction on the committee of the whole, or standing committee, was to again change out weapons and place in the word firearms. So that's the nature of that. So I urge your positive vote on the standing committee amendment.
We are on standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 70. Is there further discussion on the amendment? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, you're not speaking. Any discussion on the amendment? Question on the amendment having been called. All those in favor of standing committee amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a couple questions for the sponsor of the bill. Has the sponsor considered the policy considerations for using whole courthouse buildings or just courtrooms, and what was the logic behind that? And then were there considerations to limiting the use of security to specific situations? If law enforcement is doing their job, the baddest of the bad people come through the courthouse sometime or another, or threats of escape, or heated or suicidal folks in domestic situations. Was there any consideration to just limiting the restrictions down to as narrow as possible?
Representative Botten.
Okay, as to the, Madam Chairman, as to the issue of, you know, limiting to the parts of the building versus the whole building. Again, our intent was to create a bill that would create flexibility at the county level. What came to mind was, you know, not all the time are things in court going on. And, you know, so it does, you know, in my area of the state, I don't see security needed full time by any means. But what came to mind, and one of the drafters, or one of the rather commission members, is a district court judge from Laramie who got to preside over that murder trial having to do with the young UW student who was murdered based upon his sexual orientation tied to the barbed wire fence, and, you know, really horrendous act. And it was a big zoo, a chaos down in Laramie during that time, statewide, but people nationwide and internationally. And for the security situation of that extreme situation, the judge at that time had to impose some building-wide security for the safety of the process. So the answer to the question is, the whole building sometimes, but not all the time. That is not the thought that the commission had. As to specific limitations, that's asking people to have a crystal ball to be able to have ESP and try to understand exactly what sort of nefarious bad deeds people might want to do. The Second Amendment doesn't protect bombs, firearms. It doesn't protect chemical weapons or biological weapons or swords. It's regarding firearms. So, firearms shoot through walls. Firearms shoot through windows. So it's really hard to predict, but I think the possibility of bad things is very big. So hopefully that answers the question.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have two amendments, and I would ask for the leeway to be able to introduce amendment number two first, because if it passes, I will withdraw amendment number one.
Please proceed.
Madam Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number two to House Bill 70 and ask for your favorable consideration. What this amendment does is it does pare the bill down to only applying to the courtroom. And I just have some serious concerns about expanding the security to the entire building, because I think that really does threaten our Second Amendment rights. Let's take the case of a courtroom that's on the second floor, and a citizen who was legally carrying shows up to pay his water bill on the first floor of the building, and now he's arrested for legally carrying a firearm into a building when he wasn't even going near the courtroom. So what this amendment does is it takes all the references to building and just changes it to courtroom, so it would allow complete security for the courtroom but would not infringe on going to the entire building, so that people who don't have business with the court would not have their rights infringed upon. I'll stand for any questions.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment number two. Representative Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. My concern with this is more from a practical standpoint. I very much like the idea of paring it down to the courtroom. However, a lot of our county courthouses, what we find is that there's a whole floor dedicated to the circuit court, district court, which also has a clerk's office and sometimes whoever else they have to wedge in there, like the judge's office. And from a practical standpoint, I think of several county courthouses off the top of my head where, the only place that it is not practical to set up any type of security going into the courtroom, because there simply isn't room without taking up a considerable amount of space inside the courtroom or just outside of the courtroom in the hallways. And so while I like the concept from a practical standpoint, it's not going to be able to be accomplished in some of our older, smaller, historical and still very valuable courthouses.
Chairman Brown.
Well, Madam Chairman, this amendment certainly raises a legitimate concern. And I served on the Court Security Commission, and we have discussed this endlessly. One of the problems we have in Wyoming is we have so many different designs and so many different kinds of courtrooms and so many layouts. And then you have the variety of the circumstances. You have the Laramie that was mentioned, and you have other trials that are just routine domestic relations cases. And to some extent, this thing has to have the flexibility to fit the situation. We talked about maybe we ought to secure the entire courthouse. And for instance, in the state south of us right now, if you want to enter, they've got that great big Capitol building in downtown in the largest city in the state. It's got the great marble white steps and all the access and everything to it. And they just as well tear it all down, because there's only one entrance to that building, and it's around on the side, and it's a door smaller than the door coming into these chambers, and that's the only place you enter that building. And so we considered that. Could we do that with these courthouses? And it was exactly as the bringer of this amendment suggests, that that would mean that we would have to use security measures on everyone doing business in the courthouse, whether they're buying a license plate, paying a utility bill, or whatever it is. The bill drafted, I think, does a great job of introducing flexibility so that it can fit the circumstances. And somebody I don't think is going to walk in the courthouse to pay the water bill carrying and be arrested without being aware of that they're breaking the law because of the requirement in here that there be signs placed at wherever the security points are that make it clear that that's a security point and there are no weapons beyond that. So I don't think the question of an inadvertent violation is going to arise. But sometimes it may be necessary to secure the entire courthouse. I think on very rare occasions, but sometimes it may be. Many times with many of our courthouses, although they're not all designed that way, many of them, it's the second floor because that's where the clerk of the district court is. Some of them have the county attorney on the second floor. That's where the jury's going in and out. There's a lot of activity there. And it doesn't seem appropriate to just limit it to the courtroom because of the other activity. But they're able to just secure that floor, and then people can go and come and go and do their business in the courthouse and never know that anything's there. So I think this bill is very skillfully drafted. I really commend the bringer of the bill for the way he put it together. And the signs in it are a big deal to me. And I'll also tell you while I'm up here at the pulpit, I am the one who did one time at a conference have supper with a judge that was shot on the bench. And to hear his story is riveting. It was a domestic matter. No sign that it was any different than other domestic matters. They'd been churning things through the courtroom all day, and he gets to this matter, and all of a sudden, this guy pulls out a gun and shoots the judge on the bench. And we all worry about that. We live in fear of that all the time when we get in these courtroom situations that are heated. And we just feel that we need to begin to do some things to restrict access. So I would urge that you resist this amendment only because, not because it shouldn't be brought, but because I think that we've made provision for it, and I think this is a great compromise that gives the flexibility to provide the level of security that's needed, and it does to some extent depend on the good judgment of those who are in charge of security not to overreach, not to do more than is needed. But I really think if they began to overreach and lock up the courthouse all the time, then I think, you know, there's a county commissioner's election coming up and there are various avenues, and I think the public would, in pretty short order, would apply enough pressure that the overreaching would stop. So I urge you to defeat this amendment and pass the bill.
Further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I encourage the body to adopt this amendment. And while we would like to think that conspicuously posting a sign would have prevented the incident that my good colleague from Albany County just referred to, you're assuming, I think you're implicating a false sense of security that individual in any other instance, if it had been posted, would have said, oh my goodness, I can't carry this firearm and do bodily harm. That is just not the case. We all know that the individual is the one that is disobeying the law, regardless of the sign that's posted. He is going to enter the building irregardless with the firearm if his intent is to go in and do bodily harm to someone. So all this piece of legislation does, in my opinion, is cause us to have a false sense of security that everyone is obeying the signs and the law that's been posted. So I urge the body to support this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess just one final comment. The issue of creating a hassle for effectively for the government has been raised, and I suppose if my choice is to have to decide between making things a little bit more of a hassle for a government or infringing on somebody's constitutionally protected rights, I'm going to side on the side of creating some government hassle.
Further discussion on the amendment, Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I have a question for the attorneys. Do judges have the ability to say, I want certain types of security, and I don't want these weapons and these various things brought into my courtroom?
Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, we have looked at that long and hard on the Court Security Commission, and that's part of the reason for this bill. I think it's unclear. The judges feel that they have the inherent power inherent in the judicial branch of government and the ability to run a court. They think that they have some inherent powers to secure the entire courthouse if they need to. In fact, in our case, he secured the entire block and started. They between the judge and the sheriff, they started mapping out where every TV truck was going to go and all that sort of thing. But it's not express, and that's one reason that this bill is being brought and one reason we need it. And I want to say one more thing. I don't think, and I'll defer to the sponsor of the bill, but I don't think that you're going to have a situation where there's a sign and nobody and no other sign there. The sign goes where the secure point is, and the sign is co-located with the secure point and works that way. And I don't mind hassling the government either, but the hassle the government is here is if you're going to set up a checkpoint, then put up a sign so that somebody knows exactly what the deal is, and then put up your magnetometer or whatever it is. That's typically what it is. And I don't think that this bill is going to set up a situation where somebody who, let's say they can't read, is going to miss the sign and not have any other idea that there's security there.
Representative Croker. No. Further discussion on the amendment? Question being called. We're voting on committee of the whole amendment number 2. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Committee of the whole amendment number 2 has failed. We're on committee of the whole amendment number 1. Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would like to move committee of the whole amendment number 1 to House Bill 70 and ask for your favorable consideration. What this does is it just makes a change to the bill that I think is very necessary and would require an opportunity for those bearing arms to have the chance to check them before they enter the building. Because my concern is that if you prevent somebody from entering the building, you've effectively also limited their right to carry on their way to the building. And I don't know how you address that. So it just puts a measure in that you show up at the building containing the courthouse. You have the opportunity to check your firearm, enter the building, and on your way out, receive it back to you so that you're not forced to not carry on the street, which is constitutionally protected right.
Representative Botten.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I certainly understand the sentiment behind that. My concern here is, we tried on the commission to draft a bill in tough budget times that wouldn't require an appropriation of the legislature and wouldn't create an undue financial burden on the counties. And while they're, the county commissioners apparently are in support of the bill as drafted, I don't know what they'd have to say about it if they were going to now have to run out and buy a bunch of safes. And, since security may well be flexible and it may be on front of the courtroom on one occasion, it might be on the floor to secure the whole floor on another occasion, on the very, very, very rare occasion it might be the whole building, that safe is going to have to be movable too. I just don't know what the cost of that might be, and so that's my concern there. So thank you.
The discussion on the amendment, Chairman Elloway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Our county has some nice boxes just outside the door. Got keys. You walk in, say you want to use the box because you can't take your cell phone on the second floor. You can't take a knife on the second floor. So people do forget, so they walk in, ask for a chip, and you go out there, put your stuff in that little box, unlock it, and you're free and home and clear. I don't think that was very expensive, and the county certainly took care of it. I thought it was a great job for our county.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for the amendment. The security varies from county to county. In one court in my judicial district, you're on camera from the minute that you get out of your car and walk into the courtroom, and you walk through a whole maze to get up to the courtroom, and then they just watch you. At another courthouse in my judicial district, you just walk right in, and there you are in the courtroom. I had an experience during the last legislative session where I had to do some court business during one of our breaks and went down to the courthouse that the good chairman of corporations was talking about before they had the boxes. And I couldn't go upstairs to conduct my court business because I had car keys and a cell phone, and they didn't have anywhere to put it. They've since added those boxes. And I think that if you're going to offer security like that, you ought to offer the security for the things that people are leaving behind, because what's going to happen is when you go through security, the same kind of thing that happened in this judicial district will happen at other security places too, where not only will you not be able to take your firearms room, but you won't be able to take your cell phones and your car keys. Now, it's interesting in Wyoming that courts have the inherent authority to regulate cell phones and car keys, but have to have special legislation to regulate firearms coming into the courtroom. But I guess that's the state of the situation that we find. But this isn't a good amendment, and I'd urge the body to adopt it.
Further discussion, Representative Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I agree. I am on this. And save for those courthouses in my area, we don't have a lot of security. And my feeling is once they want to implement that security, this is just another cost that they need to factor in. And I, too, have had those same experiences. I don't think this is asking too much in favor. I think this is a good amendment.
Representative Croker.
Thank you. One final point I'd like to make, too, is especially since the discussion of this bill has said that sometimes the building will be secure and sometimes it won't, and I don't want to create a situation like myself. Sometimes I ride a motorcycle that doesn't have locking saddlebags. If I am legally carrying a firearm and I'm coming up to a building that normally I'm allowed to carry in, and suddenly there's a trial going on and I can't, what do I do with my firearm? Where do I leave it? So I think that a measure like this is even more necessary, just due to the fact that sometimes it's legal and sometimes it won't be, depending on the circumstances.
Question having been called on the amendment, we are on committee of the whole amendment number one. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the whole amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Botten. No? Question having been called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 70 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor of House Bill number 70, please rise. Mm-hmm. Those opposed, please rise. House Bill number 70 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution number 9. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution number 9, introduced by Representatives Wanitzer Dunn. A joint resolution proposing the amendment up to the Wyoming Constitution to remove any mandatory retirement age for Supreme Court justices and judges of other courts in Wyoming. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne, No, Brechtel, signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution 9 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I would defer the explanation of the bill and the amendment to the representative from House District 43.
Representative Dan Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Joint 9 proposes a constitutional amendment to be put before the voters this November on the mandatory judicial retirement age. Originally, this bill took out the age requirement altogether, but as you will see in the Standing Committee amendment, we are now setting the new age in the Constitution to age 75. The committee felt more comfortable raising the mandatory age to 75 instead of leaving it without restriction altogether. And if there are no commitments or comments in the Standing Committee amendment, I would just call for the question at this time.
For the discussion on the Standing Committee amendment, Chairman McComey.
Well, I assume when you said the committee felt that it was, you felt you needed an age in there instead of the ability and the people to look at the job that the judge is doing and not retain them, is why this came up. I like the original version because it is not an age discrimination. It does make age a discriminatory issue. I see we're making age a discriminatory issue again, and I'd like to see our Constitution change where it doesn't do that, on and against the amendment.
For the discussion on the amendment, we're on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution Number 9. Oh, excuse me, Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, if in deference to the last statement, I would move that to divide the amendment. And I would make Division 1 lines 1 through 9 and Division 2 the balance of the bill, or the balance of the amendment.
The motion is divisible, so Chairman Brown.
On Division 1, which is lines 1 through 9 of the amendment, even if you are sympathetic to the last argument about the age, I would still urge you to vote aye as to Division 1. That removes the word voluntary, and the phrase is voluntary retirement in the existing constitutional provision, and virtually nobody that we can find can explain why the word voluntary is there. I think it's there because the original contemplation was that a judge could voluntarily resign after a certain age. Then we had the amendment that put ages on there and made voluntary sort of contra-logical to what we're trying to do, but it was never taken out of there. And so I would urge you to vote aye on Division 1, even if you want to vote no on as to the ages, which would be Division 2.
Seeing no further discussion, we are voting on Division 1 to House Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution Number 9. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Division 1 of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're on Division 2. Is there discussion? Representative Swanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And we had the conversation certainly in committee, and we all knew in committee that it would come to the floor and we'd have the conversation here. We are anticipating a second reading amendment that might give some flexibility in the statute or in the Constitution to put parameters, say, between 70 and 80 and then make it a statutory decision. So I think you may see that amendment tomorrow, depending on how this vote goes. I have, no strong feeling one way or the other. I brought the bill a certain way, but I'm certainly understanding if it's, we believe it should be indefinite. I did crunch the numbers just recently and found that by the end of this year, 15 out of the 60 members in the House will have exceeded the mandatory judicial retirement age. So, when you take into account that 25% of this body this year will be 70 or over, and we certainly trust our competency, that should provide some strong argument that we will keep going strong for many years past 70 in this body, Madam Chair.
Representative Patton.
I take Division 2 personally. And thus, even though it won't be a recorded vote, I have a conflict of interest.
Representative Nicholas.
Madam Chair, the motion to insert the age 75 was predicated on several different concepts, one being that in order to have this constitutionally changed, it will be a significant thing to get it by the voters. And the issue is whether or not the judges should be able to be essentially retained for life. Even though we heard discussion earlier about this, the judges can be removed Supreme Court after 8 years and district court after 6 years, the fact of the matter that is almost never, ever happens. So that means once you have a judge on the bench, for all practical purposes, unless he commits significant malfeasance, he's there for life. So then the question is, what's a reasonable time that person should serve? And there are plenty of justices and judges that can go well into their older years and be quite effective and great judges. There are also the opposite. And the essence is, what's just practical and what's logical? The compromise during committee was we'd start with 75. There may be amendment to take that to 78. But I would urge your support for the second half of the bifurcated vote. Thanks.
For further discussion, we are on Division 2 to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
Division 2 has been defeated. We are back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill. Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution Number 9 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
House Joint Resolution Number 9 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 90. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 90, introduced by Representative Lumler, an act relating to natural resources baseline scientific assessments. This bill is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Hunt, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Sponsor Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your Chairman Lockhart?
Bill?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move when the committee of the whole rises to do so with the recommendation that House Bill 90 do pass, and urge the support for the Standing Committee 1, and turn the explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee over to our good Majority Leader.
Chairman Lockhart.
With your permission, Madam Chairman, I'd like to re-refer this bill to Appropriations.
It is re-referred, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, the appropriate process would be to withdraw Mr. Chairman's motion and then re-refer to Appropriations. And I think the Speaker has to do that re-referral after we come out of Committee of the Whole.
So your motion has been withdrawn, Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd withdraw the previous motion for introduction.
Thank you, Chairman Lockhart. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 40. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 40, introduced by Representative Byrd, an act relating to taxation and revenue, optional sales, use taxes, was referred to Committee Number 3, which recommended it to pass. Ayes, Blick, Reed, Childers, Goggles, Miller, Peterson, Semlek, Frohnish, No, Camel, Madden. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Childers?
Madam Chair, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 40 do pass. And I'll turn the bill over to the good representative from District 44 to explain the bill.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I bring you House Bill 44. This is a local taxation measure. What it allows the local municipalities to do is use specific purpose tax for road maintenance. In the process of architecting this bill, there were some discussions with some individuals about it having a stroke that was a little too broad. We have gone back and looked at statutes. The definitions of the bill are tight enough to take care of that so that the money cannot be moved around or misused other than as stated in specific purpose tax. It is not a tax that is in perpetuity. All the projects must be defined and are limited by a dollar amount. Each one of these taxation levies must be approved by the local voters, so there is accountability there. And all it is this legislature allowing a local entity to take and excise a tax upon themselves to continue and finish projects that may have not been appropriately funded, or the funds may have been the general funding in maintenance may have been diverted to another more important or expedient project that came up during the course of events. This was brought to me by a local city council here in Cheyenne because they have some problems with continuing maintenance because there are certain problems go ahead and eat away at the budget, like the maintenance, and so this will give them some flexibility in completing projects that are on the board and projects that just may be overlooked on a priority basis without this additional vehicle for funding. Representative Semlek and I have talked, and I believe that there is that he is bringing an amendment to change some language at the end, and I will allow him to comment on that if he is still bringing that amendment. But at this point, as it stands, I believe it's a good change in the statutes for the municipalities, allowing them again to tax themselves as appropriately needed to do much needed road maintenance. And I urge your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman Childers, I've been asked to clarify that you did move House Bill Number 40. Was it 40 or 44 that you moved? Thank you for the clarification, Chairman Childers. Chairman Semlek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 40 and ask for your favorable consideration. When we heard this bill in committee, and prior to that, in reviewing the bill, you look over the language, the new language that's added in here, and on line 4 on page 2, it talks about specific purposes may include routine maintenance of public roadways, and then it goes on to say in the current language, specific purposes shall not include ordinary operations. And I just had a little bit of a problem with trying to connect the new language of specific purpose means routine maintenance, but in the next line it says specific purpose shall not include ordinary operations, and I think that's somewhat conflicting. In kind of reviewing what's available to counties now with the general purpose tax, they have the ability to impose 2 cents on the general purpose tax. And then many, at least some of the counties and the communities that you live in, have imposed a specific purpose tax. And it requires a ballot statement. And when voters are asked to consider what that specific purpose is, it's usually fairly specific. It says it will be for this community, it will be for a certain water project, or for the county, for instance, it might be for road maintenance equipment, and it's usually fairly clear as to what the voters are asked to approve. So routine maintenance in this new language, to me, really indicates that under the specific purpose tax now, you can fill potholes and go all over town and do that. And that's okay. I don't have any problem with that. I would just suggest that the general purpose tax should be used for that purpose, and let's don't kind of undermine what I believe is the intent of the specific purpose tax. It's for specific projects. It's going to start here, it's going to go there, and it's going to be for this particular project. The voters can vote on it and say yay or nay, and then the integrity of the specific purpose tax remains intact. So what I have proposed for you, for your iteration in Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, is to remove routine and add the language major maintenance, renovation, or reconstruction of specific sections, and then it would say specifics. Sections of public roadways, which completes that sentence. So I think this is a little bit better in that voters who approve ballot measures on specific purpose taxes will know that it's more clear as to what they are approving. I guess on the flip side of the issue is that if you're going to use it for routine maintenance and the voters approve it, that's fine. I guess I just have a little bit of a problem with the integrity of the specific purpose provisions in our code, and would suggest they ought to maintain integrity by keeping the language specific. So that's my amendment, and I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for the amendment, as I read this, after the new language, specific purposes shall not include ordinary operations. And ordinary operations was what is generally classified, at least when I worked with this type of things, was not filling potholes or that type of thing. So that's an ordinary operation. Do that on a daily basis, especially with this time of year when the roads are going to the devil. So I rise in strong support of the amendment.
Representative Dan Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I think I'm going to rise in opposition to the amendment, not that it matters greatly, but when thinking about it in practice, especially in larger communities like mine, what I think we'll see happen is it'll go on the six-penny ballot, and we'll be asking the voters of our county specific road project that would be in one area of the county that may be in the city of Cheyenne, and people, if it was in my county, people outside would be against it. I think when you start specifying in larger counties what exactly we're going to be doing, would be problematic for the voters to agree on, where if we left it somewhat more loose, you could say general maintenance, and that it would be used to fix potholes. I guess when I signed on to this bill, that's what I envisioned. We do have places already in the six penny in my county that we go specific projects like bridges, viaducts, and road projects now. But I guess when I signed on to this bill, I thought that, you know, the basic, we have some energy industry-related traffic in my county. We have some potholes. We have some maintenance repairs on certain roadways that is immediate. And I guess I didn't envision it asking for a specific instance of road or section to be fixed, and I think that might get controversial and contentious in a larger county when there's disparate interests. Thank you.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question on the amendment? All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
The amendment is adopted. We are the bill. Further discussion, Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just briefly, the amendment certainly made it more palatable because it does at least give the facade or the notion of specific purpose. And I just to remind the of our local sales tax statutes right now. Right now we have two divisions. We have special purpose and we have general. Each of those can be up to 2%. The special purpose can be up to 2% and the general purpose can be up to 2%. However, no matter how you cut that, they can only total 3%. So you have to make a choice. If you want to go to the maximum of 3%, you got to, you know, parcel it out so that it doesn't sum to more than 3%. Now, the legislative intent way back, I expect, had this in mind because the specific purpose should be reserved for special projects that local governments need in the way of capital facilities and things like that. And the way this started out, and I don't know for sure if it's still that way or not, but the way it started out, it says, well, what we want to do is use the specific purpose tax to spend money on general routine matters, routine maintenance of roadways. And whichever side you come down on this, remember that, you know, the town that we're talking about and all the rest of the towns in the state do have the option to go to the 2% general purpose, spend it any way they want. Then, as the gentleman from number 43 said, we don't know for sure what needs to be done. The general purpose second penny would be tailor-made for his purposes. But certainly, if we had not have approved that last amendment, we would have been, you know, kind of lying to ourselves. So I'm kind of torn. I don't know which way I'm going to vote on this.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think there could be some merit in this bill, but as you just read the title of this, it seems inconsistent to me where you're talking about taxation revenue providing specific purpose excise to include routine maintenance. To me, there's just a dichotomy there, and while I'm not persuaded that this is a place to change a state statute so that that kind of dichotomy can be in front of the public, and they might not understand it.
Representative Byrd.
I urge your no vote.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As we all know, the general public is a whole lot smarter than they're given credit for. If, with all deference to the kind representative from up north in the oil town, if a person goes into a voting booth and does not understand, especially when it comes to raising one's taxes, what the issue is all about, the odds are that they're going to vote no. And so if a clearly worded ballot issue is placed before the individual, I'm sure that they'll make the right decision. What this body is doing, in essence here, is allowing a municipality the flexibility to tax itself with the permission of the residents within that municipal district. That's really all this boils down to. So do you want local control in this matter, or do you not want local control in this matter? I guess that's really what it boils down to. This is a local taxation issue approved by the local voters. And I urge your aye vote on this.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. To the good gentleman from the north that spoke a minute ago, the amendment we just passed strikes the word routine out of the title, so it doesn't say routine. It says include maintenance of public roadways as specified.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 40 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 40 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 22. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 22, introduced by Representative Blake. An act relating to specialty license plates, Gold Star license plates, expanded eligibility. Referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, that recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Barton, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Korberg, Vranish, Swanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Korberg, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Korberg?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 22 do pass. There are no committee amendments, Madam Chairman, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to my good colleague in Transportation Committee from House District 39.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what we're doing is just adding some eligibility here. Right now, we recognize parents, grandparents, and spouses, and we're looking to add children or siblings of a member of a person who's killed while in the service to their country in the armed forces. Do the amendment now? And I believe there is an amendment.
There is a Committee of the Whole amendment. Representative Davison.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 22. What this does is just add the grandchildren. And the reason I'm bringing this amendment is a constituent of mine wanted me to include grandchildren, and he made a point that there are many things that the other people that can do this, like parents and the grandparents, are of a late age, and they don't get to use it very often. In order to keep the legacy going, Heath and children should be included in his instance, and so I just wanted to bring this amendment to see if we could add that. Thank you.
Representative Dave Swanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm standing up neither in favor or against the amendment, but I did want to let you know the testimony in committee. The Veterans Commission was there. We had some questions about siblings, if brothers and sisters should be included, and then we went on further to talk about should nieces and nephews and grandchildren, and what were their thoughts. And their testimony in committee was, if we added these two, that they felt that everybody would be covered that should be covered as far as the Veterans Commission goes. So I just wanted to relay that information to the body.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I rise in opposition to this because I've spoken with the military commanders that we currently have, and I'm commander of a VFW post over in Uinta County. That keeps extending it out. There's not an end here. What you have is children or siblings, and you look at the degree of relationship to the service member, and that has been the united approach of everybody, that this is very adequate. And I rise in support or in opposition definitely to this proposed amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye. Those opposed, say no.
No.
The amendment has failed. We are back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Korberg's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 22 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Bill number 22 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries.
Yes, I know.
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee as a whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 15, recommended do pass. House Bill 5, recommended do pass. House Bill 16, recommended do pass. House Bill 27, amended and further amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 41, recommended do pass. House Bill 28, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefponed. Representative Lubno moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again, and the motion prevailed. House Bill 88, DUI penalties, recommended do pass. House Bill 29, recommended do pass. House Bill 50, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 31, amended, recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution 3, recommended do pass. House Bill 54, recommended do pass. House Bill 21, recommended do pass. House Bill 63, recommended do pass. House Bill 55, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 70, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution number 9, recommended do pass, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 40, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 22, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Kraft, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Kraft.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The report is adopted. Congratulations. Aye. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 111. Mr. Speaker, the bills as below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 15, Advanced Conversion Technologies Task Force Amendments. Ayes 21, noes 1. Signed, Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, the bills as below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 17, Game and Fish Authority Revisions, Ayes 30, No 0, signed, Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, Message 113, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 19, Predator Management, Districts Management, Ayes 27, noes 3. Signed, Donna Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 51, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, signed Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 87, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, signed Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 116, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, signed Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 121, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, signed Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Joint Resolution 12, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Reeder, signed Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Joint Resolution 13, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Reeder. No, Botten, signed Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 17, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Stepson, Zwanitzer-Dan, signed Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 35, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Stepson, Zwanitzer-Dan, signed Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 65, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Roscoe, Stepson, Zwanitzer-Dan. No, Byrd, Patton, signed Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred House Bill 66, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Hunt, Kasparic, Lockhart, Muniz, Roscoe, Stepson, Zwanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred House Bill 89, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ives, Byrd, Greer, Hunt, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dave, signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Three referrals.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, would like to re-refer House Bill 90 to your committee number 2, Appropriations.
Any other re-referrals? Re-referrals, Chairman Berger?
No, Mr. Chairman, I just add a question for the chairman. Isn't it House Bill 89?
House Bill 90.
Okay, pardon me. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're okay.
Mr. Speaker?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. May I have privilege of the floor?
Granted.
Yes.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to kind of make a special request of you for a moment. We have a member of this body who's one of his relatives has become very ill and has been hospitalized, and so he asked that maybe we could join in prayer for her. It's kind of a serious situation, and so I'd like to do that now. If you'd you don't have to stand, or you can do whatever you want. Just bow your heads and in whatever manner you see fit. Heavenly Father, I would just pray for Representative Blake's family. I'd pray specifically for his mother-in-law, Sandra Murray. Lord, I know that you understand and you deliver on the power of prayer. And all of us in this body, Lord, are family. And I just pray that you give them comfort, and specifically that you give Sandra your healing power to restore her health, to restore her confidence in this difficult time. And just pray, Lord, that you keep her in your care and see her through and give comfort to Representative Blake and his family. Amen.
Committee announcements.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, too, will meet immediately upon adjournment to hear re-referred bill, House Bill 90. And if I just may take a moment to give instruction to the body in regards to budget amendments. And please, everyone, listen up. Okay? All right, I'm just giving you instructions on amendments. This always seems to be important. Now, I would say on behalf of my committee, we would prefer no amendments to the budget, but I can't imagine that that would occur. So here's the rule. On tomorrow afternoon at Committee of the Whole, we will introduce Budget 1, House Bill 1, and we will start working through the budget. And our intent is that we will continue on to Wednesday morning, the 22nd, to finish up the first reading of the budget. You will have on Wednesday, the 22nd, until 5 p.m. to get an amendment request in for second reading of the budget by 5 o'clock. Okay? So Wednesday, the 22nd, by 5 p.m. We will then, on Thursday, the 23rd, have second reading of the budget with amendments. You will then have Friday, the 24th. We will not discuss the budget on Friday, the 24th. But you will have until 5 o'clock on Friday the 24th to get in an amendment for third reading of the budget. And third reading of the budget will take place on Monday the 27th of February. Is that good? Great. And we've got one handout for you on House Bill 1. You have your House Bill 1. And when we start to work the budget tomorrow, you'll have one of those long cheat sheets that you all love so much. And a plethora of other information to back up the decisions we made. Plethora. Without almonds in my mouth.
Chairman Illoway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, We'll meet upon noon recess tomorrow, Tuesday, February 21st. We'll finish up House Bill 34, Subdivisions, Consideration of Schools. Then we'll talk about House Bill 76, Resort Liquor Licenses, House Bill 85, Government Continuity. And we'll finish up with our House Bills, House Bill 92, 911 Services Eligible Entities.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number four, Education, will meet immediately upon adjournment today in H-10 for consideration of the following bills, House Bill 95, House Joint Resolution 8, and House Joint Resolution 7.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment today in room H-17 to consider the following bill, House Bill 113, Critical Access Endowment Challenge Program. Following that, we will hear an update from the Attorney General regarding the Affordable Care Act court case.
Chairman Corbett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet tomorrow, 15 minutes after adjournment. We will hear our final bill, House Bill 48, 80 miles per hour speed limit. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 5, Agriculture, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. in room 302 to continue hearing House Bill 7, Voluntary Livestock Identification Programs, House Bill 6, Change of Use for Irrigation Districts, and House Bill 18, Notification of Public Lands Tenant Water Right Changes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
The Sage Grouse Collaborative reception will be tonight at Little America. They'll be serving chicken. No, not really. I don't know what they're serving, but I couldn't pass that one up. Good work, everybody. 6 days down. Tomorrow, we will have to do House Bill 121 first. Then we will do 4 hours of House Bill number 1 and then general file as you see it, House Bill 90, 93, Joint Resolution 6, 17, etc. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until tomorrow, Tuesday, February 21st, 2011 at 10 a.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House will be adjourned until Tuesday, February 21st, 2012, 10 a.m.